Like a back pass that caroms in off the leading def or off the defender's rear end. That's so MLS. With myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
And it's me. That intro felt like it was careening off the far post a little bit.
Well, I guess at first it was the goalkeeper, wasn't it? It wasn't the defender, but I'm sorry for my not exactly accurate joke. I'll issue a retraction to this joke.
That's all right. It wouldn't be, I think if we've already established a trend here on this podcast, it is that, you know, factual accuracy, not always the strong point. Storytelling, hey, Bates, it's storytelling.
It's all about storytelling, you're absolutely right. And I think the story of this week is how ridiculous the playoffs are going to be.
Yeah.
Because it is clear that basically any team, most teams on a good day can come up with something fantastic, because you had so many results that were so strange and made no sense to the wider context of the playoff push at all.
Yeah. It has been a very MLS type of week in MLS. Just as I think last time we were kind of talking about the playoff picture starting to take shape, at least in the East, all of a sudden everything gets turned on its head, and some pretty surprising results around both conferences.
Montreal, who were looking like they might be petering out for the year, as won 5-3 in Toronto.
Like,
which, so I heard this result.
Yeah.
5-3. And I was like, oh, seems like a real whirlwind of a game. And then I watched the highlights, and it was like, no, that's 5-1. Everything was on fire from that amazing Howler goal to start things off, to Donadell's crazy, also crazy, outside of the box shot. It was ridiculous. What did you think?
Ridiculous is a great word for it. Montreal is a team that we've talked about is just, you know, having all the right ingredients, having some players who are in form or starting to come into form, but really just haven't been able to find the sort of magic ingredients this season to get a win. And, you know, okay, I think it says something. The end result, you go, okay, scoring 5 goals and giving up 3 goals doesn't give you a lot to go on if you're a Montreal Impact fan to know what kind of playoff hopes you have. Because if you have to score 5 goals to win, then that says a lot. However, if you just have to score 5 goals to beat Toronto, that might be the benchmark. Which, here's what I thought on Wednesday. I was like, well, maybe that's just the benchmark of goals needed to beat Toronto. Until yesterday's game.
Right.
Where they play a similarly struggling team in New England who is now coachless, or has their interim coach. Jay Heaps did not survive till the end of the season. And, you know, a team like that is always going to be dangerous. A team that really doesn't have much to lose, doesn't have a coach, everybody's clearly playing for jobs, are going to be difficult. But for the life of me, I cannot figure out how Toronto doesn't just go there and put that one away. Even, you know, just put in a solid professional performance and take it down 1-0. I mean, Ricketts has been a fantastic stand-in. You know, obviously we know what he can do for Toronto, but a real head-scratcher. I mean, a beautiful goal from Nguyen and Kamara, the usual suspects, coming up to win it for them. But just bizarre. You have to wonder, like, what happened in Toronto's locker room this week that they just sort of flatlined.
That has the look, I think, of something that really was sort of taken at the last minute. I think that game had it seemed really dreary for long stretches.
Yeah.
And could have been the template. It could have been off the same template for the New York City 1-1 draw with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
But just it had that sort of final spark that put it over the line, although not, unfortunately for Toronto, not in their benefit.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I think, I think the first goal wasn't scored until the 81st minute. So it's not, the result maybe looks a little bit more like there might have been more in it for New England. Although I will say, you know, they controlled the game. They made it very difficult for Toronto to move. And, you know, I don't think Vasquez played in that match, if I'm not mistaken. I think he played on Saturday, but not on Wednesday. However, I'm not actually going to go back and look. I'll say this. If Vasquez did play, I didn't see much of him. But, your midfielders have to create opportunities. And when New England, we know that they're a team that's struggling. They're certainly a team that you can score against. But it just didn't seem like there was much in it for Toronto. Like, it wasn't just a stifling game. It's that Toronto was sort of unable, I guess, to produce as many chances as we're used to seeing them produce.
No. I think that it was interesting because we were talking about this points record.
Yeah.
And they were 6 points away from tying the record. And we were like, oh, well, that should... I was thinking, that it might happen by this show. But indeed. Vasquez did play against New England and was yellow carded.
Oh, okay.
Like you're saying,
it's not a glowing endorsement of his skill in that game, considering I didn't see him on the pitch.
Not an incredibly visible performance, no.
No. Which, also, to put it all squarely on the shoulders of one midfielder, when you've got Michael Bradley as well there, and, I mean, like, it's up to your team to produce results, right, and get something out of it. When I believe it was Bradley's ball in that found Hasler and got the goal for them. But, I don't think any Toronto fans are going to be too, too worried. I think the supporter shield is probably still well within their grasp and all but a done deal. But I just sort of wanted to look ahead at Toronto's games because next week they're going to play New York Red Bulls, who although have been up and down and have been struggling, we certainly know if there's a team in the East that can beat Toronto, you got to think that the Red Bulls have a good chance at it.
It's true. Montreal will be hoping that Toronto does them a favor because I feel like it's so hard to talk about playoff pushes right now because every situation where you could get into where you could say, if this team falters and the other team is snapping at their heels, even though Montreal got this result, they had been in the doldrums. It's not like they're making a huge, wonderful, big playoff push, but at the same time, New York lost on Wednesday, that was the U.S. Open Cup. New York lost against Columbus.
Yeah.
So,
and that is where it does become sort of difficult because I feel like, we could do a 2-hour show every week of like, well, if this happens, then this would happen. And if this team loses, then this team might go up. But the teams that seem to need to perform to secure their place have not really been doing so. And the teams who either are fighting to get across the line or literally have nothing to lose are actually coming into form and putting on some surprisingly professional results. The one exception to teams at the top who are able to just quietly put things away and get results is the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Which is not a sentence that I'm used to encountering, but it's true. That
I struggled to even say it because it's so unfamiliar to me.
That game against Colorado was was a great display of putting away a team that's in a lower position in a sort of a crisp professional manner. It wasn't too showy,
no,
but it turned out properly after Colorado scored the equalizer.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's probably what they should have done to Columbus at home, but. you know, that was their third game in 8 days, and you saw the effects of tired legs. I think
right.
yesterday you saw as well Rabo making a couple of changes to keep it fresh. Obviously, Waston, with the yellow card accumulation, wasn't available. But, yeah, like you said, just came in and got a decent result. They gave up a bad goal, which, for me, I think for Carl Robinson as well, there's been one too many of this season. It seems like almost every other game, there's just a really easy goal that's given up. And I don't want to pick on the defense too much, because it's, you know, it's too easy of a job to just pick on defenders. But there's been a number of times this season where Tim Parker has had a really crucial play to make, and there's actually sort of a simple option, and he hesitates and then is punished for it. I'm on team Tim Parker. I think he's a fantastic young center back, but he's got to be cleaning up those mistakes, because with somebody like Aaron Mond in the wings, I go, it's going to be a difficult decision if, okay, for 90% of the game, Tim Parker plays fantastically well and deals with everything, but at crucial times makes those mistakes. How do you keep an experienced center back like Aaron Mond out of that back lineup?
It's hard, and especially unfortunate for somebody like Parker, who I think this season has served to sort of cement his place as a young... It's easy over the last 2 years, I think, to forget that Tim Parker is not an experienced center back.
Yeah.
Like he's got such a key role in the team that it's... When you look at his salary and you remember, oh yeah, this is a second year player or whatever, or that he's so recently been drafted is wonderful for him.
He's his starting center back, and he, you know, a lot of it is his partnership and chemistry with Waston. But people also forget, he's 24.
Yeah,
and you know, credit to him, he's still obviously got stuff to learn, but it's. I guess it's a little bit worrying when you see things that are, you know, sort of fundamentals to the game, which, of course, it's always easiest to criticize the center backs, but that ball that the Colorado scored on, like, there really was nothing in that. Parker just has to get a half touch, put it over the line for a corner, or just get it out of there, but instead hesitates. And I don't know if it was a miscommunication with Osted, but I didn't see anything in Osted's body language that made him look like he in any way felt comfortable dealing with that ball. If anything, he's expecting Tim to do the simple thing and just kick the ball to the side and deal with the danger.
I didn't get to see, when it comes to sort of defensive efficiency, I didn't get to see all the goals this week. But I think that last week we talked a lot about defending the far and near posts.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is that I did not see as many of those goals this week. The bad news is that it seems that teams need to cover the front.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were a lot of crosses in to the middle.
Oh, yeah.
That hit unprotected player, or, you know, uncovered players, players that were just running in and were really able to open up defenses, which resulted in a lot of high scoring games, but you know, unfortunate for Los Angeles.
Yep. I mean, I'm glad that apparently players are listening to the podcast and taking these things on in stride.
Defenders putting all their resources toward the far and near posts.
All right, he said, "We'll defend the near and far posts. We'll do it." So, I'm just. Indulge me for a second. Now, picture an MLS game, and picture two teams that, you know, on the face of it at this point in the season, let's just say they're evenly matched. Now, right. If I said this game ended 4-0 with a completely dominant performance, and in fact, all four goals were scored by one person, breaking an MLS record for fastest four goals scored ever. What team would you think had produced such a result?
like, maybe just not seeing any, not knowing what the matchups were, or not knowing what the, not knowing anything, I would say FC Dallas.
Sure. Or maybe a Chicago.
Maybe a Chicago,
maybe, yes, even a Toronto, if we didn't know about those results.
Yes.
So DC United stormed San Jose, wow, and beat them 4-0 in 4 goals where, as you said, all seemed to kind of just come through the middle. Total credit to United. They looked on fire and ready for it, and like they were getting something out of this game come hell or high water.
Mm-hmm.
But just put on an absolutely masterful performance that, although if you're a United fan or indeed their coach, you've got to be breathing a sigh of relief. In some way, you've got to be tearing your hair out going, where has this been all season? And yes, we know San Jose has been struggling and really just has a very flat offense at the moment. Like, they just can't seem to really produce much going forward. They just sort of hope the ball finds Wondolowski and the rest will take care of itself. But DC United was, the pace that we've talked about on that team was on full display. They were just running up and down the wings at will, whipping balls into the box at will. And 4 good goals, but also just like players just completely unmarked in the box. It's just
right,
like all too easy for United.
Was the sort of loading of the attacking midfielders or midfielders for DC, did that like jam up the wings or something? What happened?
You know what? I've seen the highlights a few times now. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what happened. What happened was is that, again, DC United has speed to burn on their wings, which this season they just haven't utilized enough. Or when they have, it seems like there's one guy bombing down forward. Usually it's Acosta. Gets the ball to, you know, the corner flag, flicks it into the box, and there's absolutely nobody nearby, and the rest of the team is sort of slowly panting up the field to get there. Right. And this time it was like you would have, they weren't crowding the wings, but they were sort of crowding the middle, which gave room on the wings, which meant that then there was also people to target in the box, which, you know, is not a complicated positional setup, which, and it kind of makes you wonder why they haven't had success exploiting that more this season.
Who do you think woke up from like on Sunday morning, checked their MLS fantasy account and realized they had Patrick Mullins on the bench?
I mean, probably not that many people who would even have Patrick Mullins selected, but right. Yeah, I think there's a number of people who probably invested a lot in certain players on certain teams that woke up a little bit frustrated.
And so for San Jose, this puts them in a precarious position in the standings because they sit now in the final spot in the Western Conference. And any of those teams we've been talking about, that sort of set of four teams, but one, it feels like there's no real chance. It feels like there's no real chance of this happening. But I gotta look at it, those four teams, and then Minnesota, and say who has got the energy right now.
Right. It's yeah. It's getting very interesting, isn't it? Because you, before we were talking about it, like, you know, Minnesota, no. But as you said, in terms of energy and sort of a late season bloom, San Jose, Houston Dynamo, and FC Dallas are all struggling.
Yeah. RSL, I think, they did right by themselves.
Yeah.
And could kind of hold on to that that place. A 2-0 win against Seattle is at home is fantastic. And you've got to think that that really is no fun for the Sounders in terms of trying to solidify any sort of late season table positioning.
No, and it would be troubling for the Sounders staff as well to sit. I mean, talk about no marking in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they brought that game on themselves. RSL, we know they've got the momentum on their side because they've been putting together some good performances. And right. again, speaking of a team that a few weeks ago we were saying, yeah, they're probably not going to get in there. Now, if you look at the top six teams in the playoffs for the Western Conference, Vancouver, Portland, Sporting KC, Seattle, RSL, and San Jose,
mm-hmm.
RSL and Vancouver are actually the ones with momentum right now. RSL could actually, at 41 points, two more wins, and if Portland, depending on how things go with Portland and Sporting KC today,
yes,
RSL conceivably could actually end up in the second spot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, yeah, if they can separate themselves a little bit from this pack, it would be really positive for them.
Which, you know, now that we've said it, there's probably going to be a bit of commentator's curse, and next week it'll all flip back on its head again, and Seattle will win a 7-0 game or something like that. But in terms of momentum, RSL is really the only one that's jockeying for a position that feels like, at 41 points, I would expect Seattle, Portland, and Sporting KC to drop at least a few points down the stretch, as they've been doing, which puts RSL in a great position. I think they've deserved it, and, you know, I can't believe the number of times I hear Rusnak's name called out in a highlight reel, that he just seems to take shots at will from just about anywhere in the park. And, you know, he's finding his form. Zhao Plata is starting to sort of suddenly wake up again.
Right.
It's, you know, they've always had a fantastic goalkeeper and a fairly decent back line. So, yeah, I mean, the future's in their hands. But, as you said, it's kind of surprising and probably worrying for a Sounders fan that a Seattle Sounder team that a few weeks ago looked like easily the strongest team in the West and was just very, very, almost all too easily beating all of their competitors at home, no goals. I believe, what happened with them last week? I feel like they, yeah.
That no was goals. The draw against LA, wasn't it? Or was that
was FC Dallas. Is the 0-0 with FC Dallas. So, you know, two games, no goals. Yeah, for it's worrying for any team, but if that team is Seattle and you've got their kind of firepower, that's definitely worrying at this point in the season. It's not so worrying that they're not going to crash out of the playoffs and not make it, but as everybody says time and time again, usually it's the teams that are in form when they're going into the playoffs that do well. Last year, right. Seattle was on the right side of that. But this year, it sort of feels like they're trickling across the finish line. And it doesn't seem too hard to believe that, you know, a Toronto, a New York City, a Chicago, a Columbus could pretty easily dispatch of a limping Sounders.
Yeah, you've got to look at some of these situations, and matchups are really what I'm trying to think of right now, because regardless of what your table position is, and form has something to do with it, of course, but when you look at something like New York City, Houston getting that away draw in New York City, the game plan is possible, no matter sort of who you are or what your table positioning is, I think, to be able to string together a kind of result.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big games today to watch for, in terms of the momentum in the playoff picture, is going to be that Portland-Orlando game. Orlando, we know, has struggled and not been able to produce too much, but you know, Portland's been a little bit shaky as of late as well, and so it's really up to Portland to go in there today and get 3 points if they really want to be trying to push up against the Whitecaps. That being said, the Whitecaps have now put themselves in a position where they head to Seattle midweek. They've got a difficult stretch of games, but they're also 4 points clear of Portland's Sporting KC in Seattle.
Yes.
And so, of course, no coach is ever going to admit this, but Carl Robinson has now put the team in a position where he can go to Seattle and lose. And they could still easily maintain first place if they get a couple of draws and maybe one more win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty tasty prospect when you think about going down the home stretch. They're doing what every team is trying to do, but with success is that now it's not that they're comfortable, but there's a little bit of breathing room that they can, if on Wednesday they even get a point in Seattle, those are the things that are really going to add up towards the end.
That makes sense. I think that it's kind of, in the West right now, I think that the biggest game really is to stay in it almost. Like, obviously you want to finish first.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking at this thinking, like, do you want to have the bye week? Do you want to not have the bye week? Who do you want to be playing? Is it going to be, if you end up playing Seattle, is it going to be a big problem? Like that kind of thing in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like the gamesmanship table positioning to try and get your favorite matchup is not going to be as big of a factor this year.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I'm trying to think of something more eloquent or interesting to say other than, it's going to be interesting, but it's been changing so much week to week that, you know, in a couple of weeks ago, everybody was talking about, the Eastern Conference is more or less set in place now, but it has shifted around. You've had Columbus and Atlanta go on these tears that they've been slowly moving up. New England is now at 38 points. It's conceivable, depending on results, that they could leapfrog the New York Red Bulls and take that final spot. A win against Toronto is certainly going to do wonders for their egos and momentum going forward.
That's very true.
Chicago,
and I mean, such a big difference.
Yeah, Chicago's been up and down. Yesterday got beat pretty easily by Philadelphia. So
3-1 Philly.
Yeah, it's like, and again,
one non-commentator's cursing that happened is that we downplayed that game that they were having on Sunday against New York and it ended up being a 0-0 draw. So we at least called that game's entertainment value.
Yeah. I think I can't remember exactly what was said, but I think we both sort of looked at each other and shrugged our shoulders and went, well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more or less how that game played out.
I think Atlanta really has, with that 4-0 win over Los Angeles, they're going to play. Montreal is going there today on Sunday to play. And if they could take sort of the points out of that, if they could take 3 points out of that game, they can really establish themselves as sort of like the force that is on form, that has, you know, people behind them, which is really the best possible position that you can put yourself in going into the playoffs.
Yeah. No, and I mean, it's a little, it's not quite out of their grasp, but if it's got to feel a little bit like it is. But again, the result against Toronto, I think, is going to be promising. I think they've got their work cut out for them to do it, especially in that stadium, especially against an Atlanta side that has scored like 15 goals in the last 3 games.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be difficult.
I'm also really looking forward to Atlanta-Toronto because I think I mentioned that last week. But I think that will bode heavily for sort of what happens coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, just for pure entertainment value, the seeing two teams line up that have that much star power and firepower against each other, I think, is a pretty tasty prospect.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of Columbus after their 3-2 win over New York?
I think what I always think of Columbus is that they sort of quietly just put together results and, you know, well-deserved this doesn't seem like the first time since the Red Bulls have been able to get a couple of goals, but just haven't been able to quite finish it off.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes. Yeah, the finishing you've talked about it before is a team that could potentially beat Toronto, but really can't line anything up when they despite their quality.
Sorry, New York is or Columbus?
New York. Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry, you were talking about Columbus as a team that couldn't put together results.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Now I follow. Sorry, I was trying to bring up the site to see. I've totally forgotten who scored the goals. Anyway, it's not important.
It was Jonathan Mensah started, then Bradley White Phillips, Justin Merrim, Josh Williams for Columbus to make it 3-1, and then a PK from Gonzalo Verón submit the final scoreline.
Interesting. Yeah. No. I mean. It's funny because when I was searching for the Crew's website, I just saw one of the top stories about Columbus Crew right now is why Columbus Crew SC is the best MLS team that nobody's watching. And I think perhaps the interesting storyline, you know, in the game against Columbus was that it was two teams who are fly pretty much under the radar, very evenly matched, both on paper and on the pitch. And it was interesting that you would expect that both teams would score, and then they both walked away with a point, which was pretty fair. Okay, Columbus isn't in quite the same position as the Whitecaps are, but they've been quietly climbing the table. And a team that, again, a month ago, everybody had sort of written off as like, yeah, they probably don't have it in them, is now only sitting 1 point behind Chicago and 5 points behind New York City FC.
Mm-hmm.
Form isn't everything, but again, it's very conceivable that out of the teams that the six that are currently in the playoffs in the East, Columbus is the only one that really looks like they're able that they've got momentum on their side. New York City's struggling. Chicago's really struggling. Atlanta, we know, is putting together a string of results, but we also know that they're extremely susceptible to giving up goals at the back. And the Red Bulls are struggling. So, you know.
they've got their game together, it's true. I think that that's kind of like a version of Sporting Kansas City on the other side of the conference split, yeah. Where it's like, it's solid. Just the game plan is going well. The momentum is steady but good. Not near the top of the table, not near the playoff line. It's really kind of what you would want if you want to not necessarily run into the playoffs like a bullet, but to just sort of drift in with your ability to put something together once you get there.
Yeah, and I mean, I know all teams right now are focused on the next game and just trying to continue to get results, but I think a lot of teams already do have, that know that they're likely in the playoffs, are also trying to really find that those perfect ingredients, figure out what that starting 11 is going to be, look at possible scenarios. Of, you know, every coach in their post-game conferences are going to talk about that they're only focused on the next game. However, I think even by the way that they're starting to play, you saw, I mean, and you said it, Vancouver, Colorado was a perfect example of that, is teams really trying to clean up their mistakes and go, okay, how do we just put a game away? When we're up 2-1, how do we put that game away? Because in the playoffs, that's what we need to do. We don't need to go and push for the third. We need to win the game. And I think Sporting KC has done a very good job of that this year as well, of just getting points on the board and just grinding out results. They have a fantastic back line supported by a great midfield that helps them out. And this isn't a team that goes and scores a ton of goals or has a lot of star power. They get the fundamentals right. And on their day, there's not many teams you feel like Sporting KC couldn't beat. And I think that's putting them in the best position for the playoffs. Whereas teams like Portland and Seattle that are, we can assume, are going to make it into the playoffs.
Right.
You just never quite know. And they've been really susceptible to giving up bad goals, to kind of get caught ball watching. You know, in Seattle, it's weird how much things can not change, and yet they change. That they've got more or less the same back line that won the MLS Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they just can't seem to get on the same page and are giving up. I mean, in the case of RSL, there were great goals that came in, but also could have been prevented by some simple man marking.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed, I'm trying to recall some of the specific goals. They really could have done a little better.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was RSL's strength is in that they can just run at you and tire you out over the course of a game, and then they'll just take their chances. That's always kind of been their go-to, is... Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a lot of speed, but they're really strong down the spine of the team in the middle, and they can sit quite happily for 80 plus minutes at nil-nil just waiting for their chances. And you always have to be careful against a team like that. But I mean, I know highlights aren't everything, but if you go and watch those highlights, Seattle created almost nothing.
No.
Which at
and you
home,
gotta look.
It's not just the defenders.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you got to look at the... I think I'm looking at the formation now. In I don't know where Jordan Morris is at. If he's maybe injured or something. But doing this... A lot of teams right now are doing the 4-5-1. Mm-hmm. But when you have such key players like Dempsey and Lodero, especially when you rely on Lodero to roam so much... I hope that they're not all trying to thread everything through Bruin as the target man. Well, Bruin is the target man.
Well, it sort of seems like they might be, yeah. Jordan Morris is still out with his hamstring strain, which has got to be a little worrying for them. But as you mentioned, it's not like they don't have capable substitutes who are ready that need to really step it up. But... Their midweek game against Vancouver is going to be a real test, certainly for both teams. And, you know, it's a Cascadia match. Who knows? That being said, I don't know. I don't want to jinx it. Let's just say this. The Sounders need to have their key players step up if they're going to get results. And... if, on Wednesday, they can't do that with the Whitecaps, a team that they know lots about, a team that they've certainly beaten before, however, I believe a team they haven't beaten this season, it's their house. I really feel like Seattle should win this game. Will they? I don't know.
Speaking of the home team advantage... were you at the Colorado game, the Whitecaps-Colorado game?
I was not. I was a little Whitecapsed out, and I watched it from my couch.
Ah. I've heard the energy is really good in the stadium these days. I hear that there's kind of a building of momentum. Have you heard that as well?
In some ways, yeah. So, like, you could even hear it on the live feed I was watching. You could hear the crowd from the first whistle just going at it, which is pretty unusual for BC Place.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, the energy's definitely been much higher and the team's been much louder. That being said, I think the loudest cheers for the Columbus game were for Kakuta Mane when he got subbed off. So...
Oh, oof. Scooter, no!
Scooter, no! which, it was nice to see. I like to see when fans can be respectful of a player that's moved on. And even when he scored his goal, yeah, it was dead silent. And then when they replayed it and they announced the goal, there was still... It wasn't like a standing ovation, but there was a nice loud applause for him. The Columbus game was a little quiet, but I think part of that was just the game itself was just so back and forth, and there really wasn't much in it. I feel like some of that, too, was just sort of like nerves on the fans' part that... Yeah, you almost don't want to jinx it that much, but the energy's been great, which I think has been really necessary for that homestand to, mm-hmm. to kind of get behind the team, because there has been moments where that stadium's been pretty quiet this year, even when they're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But we could do a whole other episode about how Vancouver Whitecaps markets itself and the types of people it tries to bring in, so...
Well, I'm just curious from the perspective of this sort of late season makeover into being something of a contender, and sort of how that's being perceived on the ground these days.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that have helped, and I don't want to overstate it because, you know, ultimately it matters the team that's on the pitch and what they do in those 90 minutes. But I think the opening of the new training facility this year, which happened, I think, sort of towards the beginning of the summer, also mm-hmm. kind of perfectly coincides with the Whitecaps' rise in the table and the results mm-hmm. they've been getting. And I just think that anytime you have... I mean, for any MLS club, what you're looking for is momentum and energy. Mm-hmm. And there's been times where the Whitecaps have been kind of stuck with more or less the same lineup. They're not able to get their transfer targets. Last year was a perfect example of players who we traded in and then they decided to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And now this training facility is going to help attract players, but it's also this like... monumental thing for the club that I think fundamentally changes the way people are going to show up to work and the type of training they're going to do. And, you know, it's a world-class European style academy system. They've got the youth academy in the same building, training in the same facilities as their first team. And I think that is been just a massive morale booster. And then in turn, they've been able to shore up their lineup by bringing in players. If last year you had said to a Whitecaps fan, oh, by the way, you're going to be making a late playoff run and occupying the first spot in the Western Conference without Matias Lava.
Yeah.
You'd just be like, there's no way.
Yeah. The interplay between Jordi Reyna and Freddy Montero has been interesting, I think.
Interesting and electric as well. I mean, as a Whitecaps fan, I'm biased, and Jordi Reyna is being hailed as the second coming. But, yeah, the chemistry with Montero matters, but even just... He's something different. It's not just when, you know, people have talked about we need a number 10 or somebody that can create opportunities and also score goals... Certainly Reyna fits that build, but he's different from a lot of other MLS players. Like, he really is just a slightly different caliber. And again, really hard to believe that he's so young. He's playing like somebody in their prime, and hopefully he's not in his prime, and he's got more gears to show us.
How old is he?
I think he is... Yeah, he's 24.
Yeah, that's young. It's true, and if you go back through Vancouver Whitecaps DPs, you can kind of see, like, Rivero had a certain goal scoring ability, especially when he arrived, but he didn't necessarily seem that different. You may have to go back to Camilo for that player that really sets himself apart.
Yeah, you know, I would argue Pedro Morales. In his golden time, which was probably 6 months in Vancouver, where he really just had this deft touch, but also, yeah, a very different type of player. And at that time as well, Pedro Morales was very different to any other type of player we'd had. But the interesting thing that Robinson's been doing with the Whitecaps, I think, is bringing in different types of players to what he's had in the past and to what he has now. That he's not just doing the like-for-like replacements. And you look at, like, Bernie Abini, kind of out of left field, and everyone's like, okay, this Australian striker, but he, like, also plays on the wing. Like, seems like kind of an odd choice, and yet he's been, you know, although he's not necessarily been, in terms of the production department, getting a lot of goals or a lot of assists, been a really crucial late substitute that just adds something completely different. And that it seems almost ludicrous to say, not just in terms of height, but to sub off Teixeira for Ibini seems kind of odd. Like, because it's a completely different tactic. But then you think about, like, yeah, and it's a completely different tactic. If you've been defending Cristian Teixeira for 70 minutes, and then all of a sudden you've got this tall, lanky guy that has also got a really incredibly deft and nimble touch and can easily dribble through defenders, you know, in that way he's similar to Teixeira. But you can tell defenses are just like, what? What's happening? What? Now they're putting a 16-year-old over on the left? Like, what? Like, they've got this sort of mixed bag of tricks that they can pull out.
Input error.
Yeah. My only worry is that in the past, people, I think, have figured out the Whitecaps rather quickly. And so it's up to the team to continue to develop these players and work on the best possible formation and lineup, but that it doesn't become too predictable about what Carl Robinson is going to do. That, you know, Montero's going to play 80 minutes and then Hurtado's going to come in for 10 and just run around and tire out center backs. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's working. And he's consistently done the same thing in about the last 4 or 5 games. Similar lineups, similar tactics, and with similar results. If a team can capitalize on that, I think that they could shut it down. But it is hard when, I think it was Andrew Jacobson said in a pre-match media scrum, he's like, you know, it's so difficult these days to even make the starting 18 that there's good players who aren't even getting on the bench.
Right.
Simply because who do you take off, right? Like, Mosquito's not playing, not because he's not been good or not putting in the effort. It's who do you take off? Because right now, the sort of position you would put him in is Jordi Reyna's. And now that Reyna's up to full speed, you go like, well, clearly you're not going to take Jordi Reyna off, and especially if he's having success.
Jacobson especially is somebody that gets put in a strange position for this, because he's so reliable, he can slot in anywhere, and so he kind of slots in nowhere at the same time, because it's right now he's in almost like a floating position.
Yeah, he is. I think that what has served him really well is that, A, he's tough as nails, and so he's an easy pick if you know you just need somebody to scrap it out wherever you play him. I have a feeling if you said, okay, AJ, you're going to be playing striker today, he'd just sort of nod his head and go up and get on with it. Mm-hmm. But also that he does have that flexibility. I mean, he's a seasoned vet in MLS. I would feel a little hard done by if I were him, but he hasn't complained, at least not outwardly. Yes. And, you know, last night's performance speaks for itself, is that here's a guy who hasn't played in over a month, and now he's being asked to be a center back and a stand-in for Kendall Waston. He comes in, I barely saw him put a foot wrong. Just went in, solid performance, nothing flashy, and as much as MLS is bringing in, you know, these faster players and really attacking dynamic options, I don't think players like Andrew Jacobson are yet extinct or not needed in the league. As we've seen with especially so many high-scoring games, you need players like Andrew Jacobson who've been around and know a lot of the players, have played against them a lot, and just are going to get stuck in, stay calm, and get the job done. And nobody's going to be singing his praises after the match for what a spectacular performance he put in, but he, you know, he really, really does sort of fly under the radar. And I think, you know, probably a third of the teams in MLS have a player like that that maybe isn't starting all the time, but is becoming a really crucial piece. And I'd have to say for especially a playoff situation, you'd figure that Jacobson at some point is going to be on the pitch in one of those games to just keep things calm and make sure that, you know, if it's 2-1, that it stays 2-1.
Yeah. When you talk about Ibini and his sort of unlikely place that he's found for himself in the lineup, I think that a lot of these late additions, the fact that you have not seen Aaron Mond, despite the fact that that Jacobson was drafted into that center back position, with these late additions, the worry that I would always have is that you break up sort of the team chemistry that has Carl Robinson has been a little famous for, especially coming into the first half. But it seems like players are being put in a position, especially the new ones that aren't necessarily proven, to play themselves in or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been quietly probably one of the best MLS transfer windows for the Whitecaps, or I mean for any team really, without any big name signings. In the past, it's felt like when we've brought people in late, it's because we're struggling in certain areas. And it's like, oh God, we need to get somebody in. And then almost right away, we have to utilize them because we're struggling so much in that position. This year, the fact that, you know, okay, yes, the Matias Laba injury, I think, made some things move faster than they might have otherwise. Or Tornaghi moving on meant that we needed to bring in a good replacement for him. But if you think about, okay, what are we going to be talking about in December with most MLS clubs? Is they're going to be looking to make their major moves. I think the Whitecaps have made most of theirs. The big question mark for them is going to be Montero because he's on this loan. Clearly they're going to try to either extend the loan or to buy him. I believe there's an option within his loan to buy. But the Chinese club he's been signed to could still set just a price tag too high. However, if that's the case, I think it would be unfortunate, and I think even just in terms of the fan base feeling like yet another player slipped between our fingers that we just couldn't pin down to a full-time contract, finding a striker, I mean, although that's going to be the most difficult thing to do, when you don't have to completely restock your midfield, you've got strength on the wings, you've got strength in your defensive numbers, there's not many other players that they really need to do much with. Of course, some players will come and go, and not everybody who finishes this season is going to stay with the club, of course. But Robbins has not brought in these, you know, largely these midfielders and defenders to get rid of in the transfer window. These are players that are going to be figuring quite heavily in the 2018 season.
Yeah. It's definitely like the best word to describe the Whitecaps season and how it is built to this point that you used, I think, is quiet.
Yeah.
I just remember at the beginning of the season, the sort of the buildup around sort of a worry about a lack of attacking options through a failure to use that DP spot. And having Robinson say, you know, guys, Jordi Arena is going to be really good. Just hold on. Just hold on for like 5 minutes, please.
Yeah,
please. Like, you don't know this, and I understand that, but it's coming.
Yeah. No, I feel like he must, just on a personal level, be very vindicated by the fact that, you know, even as of a month ago, the number of times on Instagram or Twitter I'd see at the end of any Whitecaps game, just Robbo out. And you're like, Okay, I mean, first of all, come on. But, yeah, he's got to be feeling pretty chuffed with himself that they got such a player in Reyna. Like any good skeptical Whitecaps fan or MLS fan, I'm going to say, form is great, but, and we know that Reyna's got the skill, but it really is, I think, it's going to be telling that what will come out in the playoff picture to really see what kind of player we have on our hands. He's still young. He's still got to stay fit. And it's working out now. However, he's also got to know that although he's arguably the best player on the team right now in terms of production, there's a lot of players who could slot in and maybe not directly take his spot, but there's multiple different combinations of Whitecaps players that could grind out results, as we've seen, without him. They've struggled without him, but they can still get results. And so I think the pressure is on for everyone, and it's not just rhetoric to say competition for places. They've built this what seems like fairly friendly, amicable club atmosphere that also means that if you put in two poor performances in a row, you may not even make the starting 18 because there's six other guys who have been training their hearts out waiting for their opportunity. And case in point, Shannon Williams. Some personal issues to deal with. He hasn't been on the bench in, I believe, over a month now because they just haven't needed him.
No.
And chances are that at some point in the playoffs, they might. If, you know, Nowinski just needs a break or goes down with any kind of injury. But that says so much. You would have never been able to say that at the beginning of the season, that this seasoned MLS starting right back would be ousted by a draft pick. And quite comfortably, it seems. Like, at this point, why would you put Nowinski out in favor of Williams?
I think that like that has always been the thing with Nowinski, and especially coming to the beginning of the season, he had the opportunity to play himself in. He was given not every game, sometimes just substitute appearances, given the opportunity to show a little bit of his mettle and to try and develop, and I think that he has developed over the course of the season. But he's just looked sure-footed. And Williams, personal issues and how that affected the game, I'm not sure. But he just doesn't seem to be in the same place that he was coming in to the year, which is unfortunate for him.
Yeah, and I mean, and you wonder too about after a stretch of games not playing at a competitive level about your fitness as well. It really does feel like, maybe not that he's been outcast, but I do not, he's one player I don't expect to see back in 2018. You know, for the obvious reasons around what was going on outside of him playing, but also the fact that how he let it affect him as well in his performance. Yeah. And, you know, personally, I don't really care. And I wish there was a way to just fire and get rid of players. But, I think it's pretty clear that he's on his way out. And at this point, it's entirely conceivable he's played his last game as a Whitecap. Again, they might still need him at some point out of necessity, but they've just got so many other options.
The playoffs are a strange and wonderful place.
They are indeed.
And you never know, with the Whitecaps or with any other team, things could look 100% different if a player should go down or if some precaution needs to be taken during that time.
Exactly. So yeah, all it takes is a hamstring injury or something, and we're singing a different tune.
And that's been that's a good reason to have this amount of depth. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about this week?
I want to throw out one little shout out. I don't know if we need to do like a player of the week thing, but I feel like there's a player we didn't talk about, and I don't want to say much about him. I just want to say a shout out to Anthony Jackson Hamel.
Yeah!
What a season he's having. I am so jealous of Montreal fans to have a young signing like that, a young player. Just, there's really nothing bad to say about the player. And similarly, I mean, I know he's a different player to Rusnak, but I feel like two players that, again, like, not big flashy signings or big names or anything like that, but just develop, like, taking shots, getting chances, taking their chance, and being in form. I think he's such an asset to the Impact, regardless of what they do in the playoffs. I think he's a player that's really going to be forming the base of the future Impact.
Yes. The one-on-one, I think the one-on-one with the keeper for the fourth goal against Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Great look from him. And like you're saying, just, I'm pretty sure he came from the academy system from FC Montreal as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just another good build, just sort of like, you know, you don't have to make as many flashy transfers, although certainly, the Impact have over their years, but when they can build a player like Anthony Jackson Hamel up from the ranks, that really it really speaks well.
Yeah, you don't always need a Didier Drogba to do the dirty work. Anyway, I think that's all I want to say.
Awesome. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at That's So MLS on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the best place, I feel.
Nice. I am at Team Bates on Twitter, and you can find me at www.team-bates.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully another huge slate of Wednesday games. They're really packing them in here late in the season, like they forgot to do any earlier in the year.
It doesn't feel a bit like that, doesn't it? It's like, oh, hey, guys, the playoffs are coming up. We need to play a bunch of games to figure out who's going to be in.
Well, we will be here to talk to you about that. Until next week. Until next week, don't get sent off.
Don't get sent off.